You're listening to Arrivé by the Cycling Podcast.
Hello and welcome to this Arrivé episode from the Cycling Podcast Feminin. We are, of course, talking about Paris-Roubaix fam in this episode. And my little warning, as usual, is that this episode will be full of spoilers. So if you don't want to know what happened, then go away, find out what happened and come back to us. Because we're going to be talking about exactly what went down and what could have happened, what might have happened. When I say we, I am joined by Denny Gray. Denny, lovely to see you here.
Hello, Rose. This time last year, we were in the velodrome, weren't we? Well, not quite this time last year because it was on the Saturday.
Yes.
Of course, that weekend, not the Sunday. But yeah, but we had to watch it from our television sets today, didn't we?
Yes, I know. I was thinking about that and I was wondering if you had done what I did last year and gone out the night before, had a kebab pizza and a few Belgian beers and then just suffered through the race today. I was hoping you would do that in my honour, Denny.
Yeah, well, I remember that last year I was worried we wouldn't be able to navigate our way around the race because, of course, I'm terrible with the road book, so I rely on you, Rose, and you, with you kind of not wondering whether you'd even be able to get in a car at one point. That was worrying. So, yeah, maybe I should have, I don't know, stumbled to the television, you know, on my own.
Hey, hold on now. This is getting... I wasn't, just to be clear, listeners, I wasn't stumbling around.
No. No, you weren't. You made a remarkable recovery, like the true professional.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you so much, Denny. Well, we will talk. Well, we might touch on it today, but we'll certainly be talking in our regular episode that's coming out this week a bit more about the fact that the Paris-Roubaix fam, the women's Paris-Roubaix, was moved from Saturday, which, I mean, we haven't had that many editions, but it's always been on the Saturday before the men's race on the Sunday. And for this year, they've moved the race so that both races are on the Sunday. It did mean, of course, we saw, had a lot less coverage, didn't we? A lot less broadcast coverage. I mean, I balked at the fact when I was working out our timings today, that the men's coverage started at 9:30 this morning and then the women's started at 4 o'clock. And had the women been racing on the fastest timetable, they would have been finished at 5. It would have been 1 hour of coverage. But yeah, we'll go into that a bit more later on. Let me give you a little summary of what happened. It was a bit of a sort of storyline repeated, wasn't it? But yes, at Paris-Roubaix fam, Rosa Kloeser of Canyon-SRAM made the first attack that stuck, holding a gap of around a minute, but was caught after the fourth sector of pavé. Then it wasn't until the end of Monzon-Pavel that the next move was made. Visma Lisa Bike held the front, but it was a sustained acceleration from Francie Koch of FDJ Suez that shattered the group behind. On the small rise following the cobbles, defending champion Pauline Ferrand-Prévot went on the offensive, drawing away a quartet with teammate Marianne Vos, Francie Koch and Blanca Vass of SD Works. Ferrand-Prévot continued to work tirelessly at the front as the four built a lead that never wavered. On sector 6, with 24 kilometres to go, Koch put in an acceleration that only Vos could follow. Vass was dropped, but Ferrand-Prévot was able to eventually bridge back again and came yet again to the front. On the next sector, it was a similar story. Another power move by Koch saw Ferrand-Prévot dropped again, and again she returned. A chase of Lotte Kopecky, Lucinda Brand and Megan Jastrab failed to make any real inroads at 1 minute behind, a gap which grew bigger after Brand was taken out by a spectator. Koch led the way into the Carrefour de l'Arbre, putting Ferrand-Prévot into difficulty. She came back, of course, and Vos dug in at the front, but was tightly followed by Koch. In the final run-in, Koch put in a sprint that distanced Ferrand-Prévot, but she was, of course, back and leading the front as they entered the velodrome. Koch saw her chance and floated up the banking, taking Vos with her and opened up her sprint. Vos kept pace, but never got in front. Koch wins her first classic, Vos narrowly taking second and Ferrand-Prévot taking third. Now, Denny, you were very quiet on the WhatsApp group today, but I have to say we covered loads of topics, didn't we? Rebecca Charlton talking about Brazilian bum lifts and everything. You'll have to catch up. But Lizzie Banks, at the start of the day, said this win is going to Francie Coq. And I don't think, as much as she's been in stellar form this season, I don't think many people would actually back her, was actually backing her for the actual win. Because it's one thing to look really strong and to be a bit of an unknown sort of package in these races, but it's another thing to go and win a race like Paris-Roubaix. So I can only hope Lizzie Banks put a huge amount of money on that this morning.
Yeah, an amazing prediction. I think Lizzie now maybe has ownership of the Crystal Balls.
Don't let her take your Crystal Balls from you, Denny.
Well, I mean, can't take that prediction away from her.
That was
tremendous. And of course, as you say, it had been coming. She'd had a tremendous season. She, you know, was already the signing of the season with the performances she'd had. Of course, she'd been at DSM for 7 years and then decided to join FDJ United this year. And has just been incredible, hasn't she? I mean, we remarked on her, I think, on every race she's been in, from Omloop Het Nieuwsblad when she led out Demi Vollering to her podium at Strade Bianche. She's barely been out of the top 10 this year. And then to get that win was something, I mean, it was monumental for her, given the fact that she's only won one professional race apart from her two German championships, and that was back in 2019. And as you say, probably she wouldn't have been at the top of the bookies list this morning, but on the other hand, it was kind of building, wasn't it?
It was, because she has been so phenomenal, and it was a kind of, if we can say, a typical performance from her already, even though, you know, we haven't seen her at the front end of the race and competing for the podium all that much in those 7 years that she was with Picnic, well, the team that was Picnic PostNL. But it was a kind of a typical performance in that she got the result and yet she put in so much of the work. It wasn't like a sit back and let everyone else take responsibility and I'll just come in and pip everyone else at the end. It was a typical performance from her in that we obviously saw Pauline Ferrand-Prevot doing a huge amount of the work. But I mean, every acceleration, apart from maybe one from Marianne Vos, was by Francie Coq. She was, every time she hit the cobbles, she was trying to get away. She was trying to lose the likes of Pauline Ferrand-Prevot and Marianne Vos. So what I also love to see is that hard work is paying off for her. She clearly, I think, had the strongest legs in that race. Incredibly deserving winner.
Yeah, she was incredibly deserving. And as you say, it was really nice to see her not worrying about the risks she was taking in terms of putting in the efforts, continually attacking. She was in an almost impossible position, wasn't she? She was up against last year's winner and the Tour de France femme champion, Pauline Ferrand-Prevot, and Marianne Vos, the greatest of all time, who we all know has a brilliant sprint at the end of races like this. And you didn't really expect her to pull it off. I mean, the odds were against her. You'd think those two riders would have both the tactical nous and the legs, kind of the armory to out race her. But somehow she kept doing it. And as you say, the surprise was that she kept attacking. Every sector she took to the front. She lost Ferrand-Prevot, as you said in your summary, a couple of times. She even attacked with about 5k to go, and we were probably all wondering what she got going to have left now that Vos is on her wheel. She just kept pulling and pulling and pulling, and you think she's going to have nothing left for the velodrome, and it's all now down to Vos, who's getting a kind of armchair ride to the finale. But somehow she pulled it off, and the sprint was also fantastic, wasn't it, at the end. Well, they were led out by Ferrand-Prevot. Vos was the last rider in that trio, and you fully expected Vos to kind of nail it. And Vos has been close several times, hasn't she, in this velodrome. So she's had the kind of chance to practice her technique. But what I loved about Coq was she rode like a track rider. She kept Vos high up the banking, made it as difficult for her as she could for her to come round at the finish. And and took the win. And it looked very, very close on camera, didn't it? Because of the foreshortening. But when you see the gap between Voss and Koch from the photo finish, it wasn't actually that close at all. It was very, very convincing.
No, it was actually... I was surprised as well, because I thought it was kind of a photo finish when you first saw it. But then, I mean, Voss actually never got in front of Franci Koch. She was always ahead. And I think that what that also speaks to is a huge amount of mental resilience and a huge amount of confidence. Because imagine being in that position where you're going up against these two former world champions, these two riders that are so storied in the sport. I mean, both of them are kind of greatest of all time level. And coming to that position, and you know, your last pro win being in 2019 in the Bowls Ladies Tour, which is a much smaller race, much less prestigious. I mean, you know, much less hard also, much less attritional. And to still have the clarity of thought to work out the right movement and when to go and what to do, and to not be put off by it. But it is one of those typical cycling things where if she had have finished second there, we would have been questioning what was she thinking. Why when Pauline Ferrand-Prévot was dropped and it was just her and Voss, why did she continue to work? Why was she still on the front? But when she wins, it's kind of like it is all paid off. But I think the reason why she was able to do that was that she felt like she had the strongest legs. And we did see she was always making the acceleration. And that very first acceleration that she made, which kind of split the pack apart and drew away these... the second acceleration she made, which was after it was a quartet, and she managed to drop Voss and Ferrand-Prévot. We saw that actually it was a huge gap to Voss, and Voss had to do some really heavy chasing on. And then after that point, Voss was then like, I'm not going to give this rider an inch, because she clearly has the best legs today. So I think there was, not only was she physically in the best shape, but also just to have nerves of steel to get to that finish and still pull it off, I thought was impressive. But we should talk about Visma Lisa bike. I mean, it was a commendable performance, of course, from them. And we saw a huge amount of teamwork going into it. We saw, you know, Lieke Nooyen leading on the cobbled sectors to try and set up Pauline Ferrand-Prévot and Marianne Voss. So it was an awesome performance for them. Really, though, you know, when it was two against one, you thought that they surely, despite how strong Franci Koch was, you thought that surely they must be able to win it. I mean, to have two on the podium and not have the win is going to be a bit of a disappointment for them, isn't it?
Yeah, and you could see how much of a disappointment it was. There were, you know, tears in the velodrome from Voss. Ferrand-Prévot looked really, really fed up after the race. And you can see why, because, I mean, Voss has gone through a lot of personal tragedy going into the race. She lost her father, Henk, of course. And Ferrand-Prévot said she only rode the race because she wanted to support Voss. It wasn't originally on her program even, but she wanted to be there and to honour Voss's father. So really kind of touching reasons, and kind of shows how close they are. We saw that last year when Voss was hunting Ferrand-Prévot out after the race to try and celebrate with her. So they had the motivation and they, you know, as we've said, they're such celebrated riders. You did expect them to win, but Ferrand-Prévot clearly didn't quite have the legs today, did she? We saw her continually getting dropped, and she was doing more work of the pair. I think, you know, she's clearly trying to race for Voss, tried to tee her up. I think the big surprise, therefore, was that Voss couldn't quite finish it at the end, because we know how great her sprint is. And she said in an interview afterwards, she hasn't quite got her sprint right in the past, in Roubaix. She said she's gone too early before. She left it later today. But yeah, she's going to, I think, you know, obviously regret, maybe go play things over and over in her head. But at the end of the day, as you said, Rose, I think, you know, Koch had the strongest legs. And as Voss admitted in her post-race interview, you know, it's not a normal sprint. is that what she said, you know, and at the end of a race that's that attritional, you can't really go on kind of the form books in terms of sprinting. So I don't know if they could have got anything played it differently with Ferrand-Prevot not quite having the legs. I'm not sure.
I love you saying that Ferrand-Prevot didn't really have the legs today, having seen her.
Well,
I would love to see
relative.
You on a cafe ride, Denny.
Yeah. Relatively speaking, compared to Voss and Koch, that's all I meant. Clearly, she was one of the strongest riders in the race, even though she, you know, hadn't targeted this race. But that's all I meant, of course.
No,
Pauline,
she was.
Of course, if you're listening, she's one of the greatest cheese connoisseurs in the peloton. So I mean her no disrespect.
You don't want, yeah. So if you're a cheese connoisseur, you don't want to be offending her. But yeah, I mean, she was phenomenal, though, wasn't she? She really was, as you said, that she came in late to do this race, entirely with the focus of, despite being the defending champion, with the focus of supporting Marianne Vos in it. And she was just absolutely tireless in coming back, wasn't she? Because the first time we saw Koch accelerate and we saw Blanca Vass go, that was it. We never saw Blanca Vass again, really. No. You know, she joined back to that group.
At that point, I thought they really nailed it. That's just so, it was so cool and calm, wasn't it? The way she's just kind of deftly got rid of Vass and got back onto the trio. You know, they had it. Sorry, I interrupted you, Rose.
No, there was definitely an intention there, wasn't there? That she kind of looked behind, Pauline Ferrand-Prevot looked behind, saw this acceleration was going, and then kind of almost slowed a little bit, dropped Vass, and then came back across and just repeatedly did that, repeatedly wanted to work in favour of Marianne Vos and kind of repay the work that Marianne Vos has also previously done for her in races. But you say it was an emotional one. I mean, I was kind of heartbroken that Marianne Vos didn't win today because, you know, her father had been seriously ill and she had skipped off many races to be with him. And then he died in the past few weeks. And so I think it would have been that perfect sort of storyline, wouldn't it, if she had finished it off. But I do wonder, actually, if this Melissa bike made a bit of a mistake coming into that velodrome. And obviously, Pauline Ferrand-Prevot was absolutely exhausted. But she came in at the front. And then, obviously, we knew by the pattern of the racing that there was no way that Pauline Ferrand-Prevot was racing for herself or even that she had the legs to win herself. But I think that the sprint could have played out slightly differently if Ferrand-Prevot looked as if she was competing for it, because I think it was quite clear when Francie Koch kind of moved off of her wheel and moved up the banking. It wasn't like Ferrand-Prevot then started to give whatever she would have had left at that point and kind of made Francie Koch kind of second guess which wheel she should have been on and who she should be chasing down. I think that could have maybe just given a little bit of hesitation to Francie Koch that might have given enough of a window to Marianne Vos to come across, but I mean, come through. But then, I mean, Francie Koch did have such strong legs, didn't she? I mean, I don't think she ever looked in doubt. When you see that aerial shot, she never looked in doubt there. So, I mean, do you think Visma-Lisa Bike could have played it differently? Or maybe even earlier on, could they have done something different to try and shake off Francie Koch a bit more?
Yeah, I mean, Ferrand-Prevot did kind of try to a counter-attack when she came on back to the trio at the end, didn't she? I don't know if it's a counter-attack or just her pulling hard, but I don't think she was ever going to be able to drop Francie Koch. So, I think the only way they could have played it differently was for Vos to try to have dropped Koch before the velodrome, which I think she felt confident in her sprint that she didn't need to do that, particularly with the work Koch was doing in the velodrome itself. I guess they could have played it differently, but, you know, as you say, I'm not 100% convinced the outcome would have been any different whichever way they played it, because Koch did look so strong in the sprint. It was a pretty convincing win, and, you know, she fully deserved it.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
It was very emotional seeing Voss, wasn't it? Because we don't actually ever get to see her emotional, or she at least kind of hides away her emotions. But we did see her kind of openly crying. You could see on the post-race interview also, when she was kind of being asked about how she could have played things differently, that it was really hurting her, actually, coming second here. And I feel like it's also just this sort of a bit of unfinished business at this race. I mean, there's very few races that Marianne Vos hasn't won. And this one, because it is new to the women's peloton, or relatively new to the women's peloton, is one of the ones that she hasn't won. She's certainly won sprints behind on a number of occasions. She's got a number of fourth places at the race. And, I expect to see her back next year to try and compete on this one again.
Yeah, it was nice to hear her say at the end of her interview that she's going to come back next year. So, you know, her Infinity contract will continue at least until next year, and she'll be back. And that's great. Yeah. And she's one of those rare riders, isn't she? I can't think of anybody else where you kind of almost expect her to complete all the great race wins somewhere, because has won so much. And as you say, it's a little bit like the men's race earlier today, where Wout van Aert won, and you'd expect him to have won one of the big classics in his lifetime. Marianne Vos, you'd expect to get nailed this one. You kind of hope she would, but it's frustrating, isn't it? Because she has been so close. She's been in the mix several times in this race, but it hasn't quite worked. And it really did feel like the golden opportunity to win it today. So I don't know whether she'll have a chance as big as this again.
Well, let's talk about some of the other riders, because it was funny though, we had this kind of move, didn't we? And the quartet went, and then we saw actually very little of the other riders really in the coverage. So we didn't really get a huge sense of who was doing what and who was working, who was trying to bring it back. But I did want to talk about SD Works, because they obviously had Blanca Vas in that group of four, but they were still on the front of the chasing group even at that time. And then of course Blanca Vas was dropped, and then they kind of put their big guns on the front. Then they kind of brought in Lorena Wiebes and Lotta Kopecky, and then Kopecky eventually went away in a chase group to try and make some inroads. But I mean, it was sort of not terribly committed, was it? I don't know whether that was because Blanca Vas was in that group of four, and then they felt like as much as they wanted to chase her back, they also sort of shouldn't, which is not, it's not very like SD Works to know, have a sense of, you know, what the right and wrong thing to do in a bike race is. In some ways, they kind of do go their own path. But yeah, how did you see that, Denny? It seemed like it was just literally, I mean, as it can be at Paris-Roubaix, a single moment of hesitation and that four was gone, and the race was kind of wrapped up very quickly. But yeah, SD Works, yeah, what did you make of them?
Yeah, it was, their race just kind of fell apart, didn't it, once Vas had got dropped. And they did have the numbers at the end, or rather at the end, when the move went, they had a lot of riders still in the mix. Lotta Kopecky, Lorena Wiebes, Julia Kopecky, Blanca Vas, of course, made the move. And at that point you thought, well, you know, Vas in her own right is a great finisher. She would be more than capable of actually winning from those four. But she clearly didn't quite have the legs. And, you know, you never quite know what the communication is like in the middle of a race, how easy it is to actually get messages back and forth, and whether Vas herself even knew, you know, how good she was feeling. Clearly she was good enough to make the split, and she was good enough to be well positioned and follow that move. So she clearly wasn't in terrible form, but she couldn't quite follow Francie Coq when she made a move, and that was the end of that. And then, yeah, they had this curious tactic behind of doing a little bit of work to try and keep the break of four in check, but not really committing. And then, of course, by the time Vass was back in the group, they were a minute down. Phoebus and Juliet Kopecky actually committed, didn't they, to the move, to the chase. And then we saw Kopecky make her move to try and bridge across, but it was too late by then. And even though they were unlucky to lose Lucinda Brand, who got taken out by that spectator, so they were down to two riders chasing three, it was still, you know, too much to make up, I think, by then, wasn't it? And so, yeah, it was curious. Kopecky, I think, you know, we talked about this a bit off air, but Kopecky seemed a bit out of sorts. I know she had a difficult year last year, didn't she? And it's very difficult to read what's going on in someone's mind when you're watching a bike race, but she was at the back of the main group quite a lot during the coverage we saw. And it was only until kind of later on that she suddenly made her move. So, yeah, I don't know what that suggests, you know, whether that does suggest the rider who's not quite enjoying a bike racing at the moment, or whether, I don't know why she was that poorly positioned, because she's, you know, she's a world champion. She knows how to work herself around a bike race.
Well, it's funny, isn't it? Because I think she is a bit of a poker face kind of rider in terms of even where she is on the road, because I know that I've definitely watched her numerous times before in things like the Tour of Flanders, and you think, she's coming off the back, or she's right hanging on right at the back of the group, and then she'll come through and win it. So it's very hard, I think, to judge how she's feeling by her positioning, because she's been known to come all the way from the back of a group all the way to the front and win races. She's obviously, it's not like she's having a bad year either. I mean, she did have a really difficult year. We mentioned on the last regular pod, didn't we, that how many injuries she'd been through, kind of three waves of injuries last year. But this year, she won in Nocera-Cursa, and then she won Milan-San Remo, which was a huge target. Fourth place at the Tour of Flanders, and a fourth place today. So it's not like she's out of form, but I did think it was really odd to see her positioning. And what I think is really strange is that at the end of the race, in a post-race interview, she did say I missed the move because I was, further back and I was out of position. But that wasn't the only time she was out of position. I mean, even after that, even when they were kind of making the chase and trying to make up ground on the four that went ahead, she was still sort of out of position, or kind of to the side, to the back of the pack. So it's odd for me to have that understanding of that she'd missed the move because she was poorly positioned, and then not try and correct that. But maybe she kind of it's, for one thing, it's very hard to make up your positioning in a race like Paris-Roubaix. I mean, there's not a million different routes on those cobblestones that are all the best route. You know, there's only certain paths that you want to take, for one thing. There's a huge amount of jostling. There's a huge amount of danger also. But yeah, it was strange to see her kind of near the back, but maybe she also sort of had a sense that it was up to her teammates to do the chase back there, and then because she needed to save herself for the velodrome. So, you know, it was her right to kind of stay nearer the back. But yeah, it was strange from SD Works overall, just because I thought, well, if you knew that Blanca Vass wasn't the person that you wanted in that group of four, then you shouldn't really be chasing her at all. And if you know that Blanca Vass isn't the rider that you wanted up ahead, or she's not feeling very well, or she hasn't got the legs for it, then you really wanted to put a concerted effort in straight away to try and bring them back.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a curious one, isn't it? Maybe more will come out as we, you know, people speak more about the race. But, you know, we know from previous editions that the winning move can often go a long way out in this race. And, you know, the four who drifted away just after Mons en Pavel did so, I think it was like 47k to go when they actually made the move. But, you know, that was a dangerous moment. And you would expect a team with Kopecky and Vibus, who both riders, in brilliant form, capable of winning the race. Kopecky's done it before. It was a surprise to see neither of them kind of at the front, making joining Ferron-Prevot and Voss, who are, you know, very experienced operators. They had the wrong, clearly had the wrong rider follow them, didn't they? And it just didn't work out. But it's hard to put your finger on quite why Capecchi wasn't well positioned. I know Vivas, I think, had a puncture at one point. Maybe that explains why she wasn't.
She also
there.
She slid out on a corner as well, coming off of the cobbles at one point. But that's when Vivas was actually at the front, wasn't it, or near the front?
Yeah, yeah. So I think, you know, they'll be disappointed. I mean, Capecchi still finished fourth, like she did at Flanders last week. But still, you know, by her very own high standards, you know, I think she would have hoped for more, wouldn't she? And the SD Works team would have hoped for more.
Well, we should. I think we're going to talk about this more on our regular pod that's going to come out this week. But we should give mention to the fact that the race was moved to a Sunday, and you know, we only got kind of an hour and a half of race coverage, and then there was obviously the interviews and the podiums and things afterwards. Obviously, it's a move that has been made ostensibly to encourage there to be higher TV audiences. But for me, I can't really, the value in having a higher TV audience for much less time, to me, that doesn't really make sense. It's also, it's playing second fiddle now, isn't it? The women's race, when it was a standalone event on the Saturday, felt like it had its own billing. The spectators were there to see the women's racing. And it felt now that it's kind of coming afterward that it's a bit of a sideshow. Mm. What's your kind of take on that move, Denny?
No, I mean, I agree. I mean, you know, the ASO were kind of unrepentant, weren't they? They said before the race that, you know, there will be a shorter broadcast, but on the other hand, there'll be a much bigger audience on the roadside and potentially on TV as well. And audience is always better on Sundays. But he also said that they'd had feedback from the local authorities that it was more complicated to block off roads 2 days in a row. And they have, of course, lost Zwift as the race sponsor. So there's a tighter budget they're operating on. And I know all these factors, you know, need to be considered, but nonetheless, there are still decisions about how much coverage you give a race, even if it's on the same day. It happens with other races, Strada Bianchi, Tour of Flanders last week. But we normally now expect to see more coverage on TV of the women's races. And it, as you say, it could have been as little as an hour today. We missed a huge amount of the race. And the way it was positioned and covered was really poor. And it sends a signal, doesn't it? I mean, it said there's a clear hierarchy. And the hierarchy was the men's race takes precedence and a president, and the women's race is a kind of a bit of an afterthought, and that's the message it seemed to send, and it is unfortunate. And there could have been other ways they could have arranged things, even if everything was on the same day. And I think that's the unfortunate thing. And even, you know, we were watching, of course, the UK feed, but after the men's race, there was half an hour of analysis of what happened in the studio while we were waiting for the women's race to start. And then once the women's race had finished, we did manage to get an interview with Francie Koch, but then very quickly coverage changed to the podium ceremony for the men. And so not even the post-race analysis gave the women the weight it needed. And it was disappointing, but hopefully that could be rectified. A lot of people have, the Cyclists Alliance, for example, and others have kind of said how disappointed they are to cut. That's an understatement, but yeah, it's not a great move.
No, well, we will talk a bit more in detail about that move and the reasons behind it and what that means for women's cycling in our regular episode, as I say, that's coming out this week. How many, I don't want to say waffles, because although the Paris-Roubaix is almost a Belgian classic, it isn't quite. So you must know a cheese from that northeast region. I'm testing the cheese expert now.
Well, God. Well, Camembert is the obvious choice, isn't it? Because that's not too far away. So I'm fairly safe if I say Camembert. But how many wheels are Camembert?
Out of five wheels.
Three wheels.
Yeah, I might say four wheels. I mean, there could have been a bit more action, but you know, a great sort of not entirely surprise winner, but a bit of surprise, a bit of an emotional narrative going on. Certainly, you know, yeah, I guess there was not loads of different moves, but I mean, it was also amazing seeing Pauline Ferrand-Prevot come back again and again and again. So that's why I'm going to give it one extra wheel than you are. But well, now I've mentioned Camembert, you're going to have to go off and eat some cheese, aren't you, Denny? That's how it works.
Well, unfortunately, there's fish and chips in the oven, so yeah, I'll have to. Maybe I'll take the cheese out for an evening snack.
Yes, a midnight snack, as I've heard.
Yeah, got some good Gruyere in the fridge, so that'll come out, and some Colston Basset. Yeah, that'll do.
Has to be done. Well, thank you very much, Denny. I'll let you get back to your cheese fest over there.
Thank you, Rose. Well, it was great to catch up again.
And thank you, listeners.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb, and Lionel Burney.